Reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Leela, chapter 8, verse 50 through 65. This is the story about the transcendental temple commander, the glorious qualities and service he was performing. His name was Sri Haridas Pandit. So yesterday we were hearing how he was a servant of Govindaji, Rupa Goswami's beloved deity, and he was decorated with all transcendental qualities. He was gentle, tolerant, peaceful, magnanimous, grave, sweet in his words and very sober in his endeavors. He was respectful to everyone, and he worked for the benefit of all. Diplomacy, envy, and jealousy were unknown in his heart. He was a temple commander. Yeah, you can't without. It's too saintly. No, this is text 57. You can hear it. That's loud. That's coming out of them. Krishnara ye sadarana sadguna panchash se sabagunara tanra sharire nivas. So we heard about 8 or 9 qualities, and now Krishna's Kaviraj says the 50 qualities of Krishna were all present in his body. So these are the qualifications to be a temple commander. If you want to be a commander of Krishna's temple, then you have to have the same qualities as the boss. Of course, Krishna has 64, an unlimited quantity. But a perfected being can exhibit 50 qualities. Prabhupada has one purport. In Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the transcendental qualities of Krishna are mentioned. 50 are primary, and in minute quantity they were all present in the body of Haridas Pandit. Since every living entity is a part of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, all of these 50 qualities of Sri Krishna are originally minutely present in every living being. Due to his contact with material nature, these qualities are not visible in the conditioned soul. But when one becomes purified devotee, they automatically manifest themselves. This is confirmed in Srimad Bhagavatam, 5th canto, chapter 18, verse 12, often quoted verse. Yas yasti bhaktir bhagavat yakinchanha saver gonais tatra samasate sura harava bhaktasya kuto mahadguna mano ritena suti dhavato bahi. So someone who is in an akinchan or niskinchan, then they will exhibit these qualities of all of the divine qualities of demigods will be exhibited in their being. This is a very important word, qualifying word in this verse, akinchan. Prabhupada translates the word akinchan as without motive. Prabhupada's translation of this verse. In one who has unflinching devotional faith in Krishna, all the good qualities of Krishna and the demigods are constantly manifested. One who has no devotion to Krishna has no good qualities because he is engaged in mental concoction in material existence, which is the external feature of the Lord. So Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami is using this verse from 5th canto to further describe the qualities of Sri Haridas Pandit. That he had all these good qualities that we read about, magnanimous, and he was peaceful, tolerant, gentle, grave, and sweet in his speech. But all these were byproducts of his Krishna consciousness. And the point is that these qualities, at least Prabhupada's telling his purport, they're dormant in the jiva. And if the jiva becomes niskinchan, or free from any material motive, then these qualities are manifest. Now, sometimes this verse is used rather loosely. People say, oh, you just become a devotee. Just become a devotee, and by being a devotee, all these qualities will manifest. Well, that's a fact, but the qualifying word is akinchan. You have to be an akinchan sadhu, like sometimes people have the name Akinchan Krishna Das. One disciple of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, his name was Akinchan Krishna Das Babaji. So akinchan is a very high qualification, to be free from any motive. That means that you're anyabhilashita shunyam. You don't have any other desire but to serve Krishna. And the materialist, this verse compares this position of being akinchan to a materialist who is manoratain asati, davato bahi. The materialist is riding on the ratta, the rath, or the chariot of his mind. So the chariot of the mind moves on the wheels of the three modes of nature. It's a three-wheeled chariot. Because there's only three modes of nature. Just like we often come to Radhakund on a three-wheeled chariot. Right? It's called a tempo. Or an auto scooter. So this mind is running on the wheels. Mano retain asata. What does it say? Mano retain asati dhavato bahi. Because the mind is running on the wheels of this chariot, the three wheels of sattvagun, rajagun, and tamagun, then it's always moving. This is the whole idea. A chariot, the function of a chariot is to move, carry you from one place to another. So the mind is compared to a chariot because it's always carrying us from one mode to the other. It says that the non-devotee doesn't have any good qualities. Why does it say that? They do have good qualities. The non-devotees also have good qualities, but they're not permanent. They change. The good man today is a bad man tomorrow. The peaceful man today is an angry nutcase tomorrow, or whatever. In other words, because they're on the chariot. When you're on the chariot, today you're in Delhi and tomorrow you're in Agra. This chariot is always moving because the modes are always changing. One whose his mind is subjected to the modes, then he can never be fixed in any one position. Because the modes are always competing for takeover, the kingdom of the mind. So sometimes ignorance prevails, sometimes passion, goodness. But the devotee is different because he's akinchan, Bhagavati Kinchana. He's devoted to the Lord solely and wholly. Then he becomes transcendental. Mam chayobicharina sagunan, he says, sagunan samatitya itan brahmabhuya yakalpate. Because the mind of a devotee is fixed in the service of Krishna. It doesn't go anywhere. He's always peaceful. He's always tolerant. Because his qualities are coming from his soul. Because you see, there's the pure form of these qualities and the impure form. The impure form or impure form of these qualities, because materialists, they're also, look at these qualities: gentle, tolerant, peaceful, magnanimous, grave, sweet in his words, sober in his endeavors, respectful to everyone, work for the benefit of all, diplomacy, envy, jealousy were unknown in his heart. These are the characteristics of Sri Haridas Pandit, temple commander of Govindaji. So all these gunas are qualities you can find in material people. Because oftentimes when we preach, people say, oh, you say the karmis are demons, they're all bad, but I know so many good people that have all these good qualities. We say, yes, they have them today, but they may not have them tomorrow. This is the point. Because these qualities that they're exhibiting are products of the modes of nature, because they're conditioned souls. So the conditions are always changing, like the weather. The weather is sometimes windy, sometimes not windy, sometimes hot, sometimes cold. So people's behavior and their qualities they exhibit are changeable, like the weather. When the circumstances change or the modes change in different ways, then people become very agitated, very disturbed, and then they exhibit what we call uncharacteristic behavior. And this term is used. Oh, what happened to so-and-so? I thought he was such a peaceful man, but one day he picked up a machine gun and shot down 10 people. and I never expected it of him. So this is the modes of nature, the chariot. The mind can change at any time. The loyal, faithful wife can poison the husband. Everything is changeable. Mood changes. Mood changes means mode changes. We say mood shifts. Shift of mood means a shift of modes. The modes shift and the moods shift. But devotee is not so shifty. When the lady asked Prabhupada in New York, she said, what do your devotees do for recreation? I mean, they work so hard all week. I see them on the streets selling books all day and working so hard. What do they do for pleasure? And the Prabhupada replied, first thing he said is, our devotees are not so fickle. Fickle means that chanchal or changeable. And then he went on to elaborate that everything we do is recreation. We don't need a vacation because we're only vacating. we're only on vacation. The real question is, when are you guys going to work? And people often say that. Don't they say, why don't you guys get a job? Right? All you do is chant and dance and eat prasadam and pass out books, and you should get a proper job. So this Akinchana, he was Akinchana. Haridas Pandit was Akinchana. So that's how he was able to illuminate the world with his steady flow of qualities. Because the devotee's qualities, they're as steady as the sunshine. Sunshine has been shining from time immemorial. It hasn't reduced. It hasn't increased. It's steady. Because the soul is like the sun. It steadily burns with its devotion for the Lord. So in that devotion, one will find all the transcendental qualities that are reflected, even in the materialist. The difference between the materialist and the spiritualist is that the circumstances, the environment may change, the circumstance may change, people may change, all kinds of tests will come to the devotee. But he will not change his qualities. He'll always be steady. And this is a symptom of nishtha. It's not what happens to you that counts. It's how you respond to it that counts. So two people respond to the same situation in different ways. The spiritualist responds one way and the materialist another. When Prabhupada was lying on his deathbed, when Prabhupada was leaving this world in Vrindavan, then the doctor came and examined him and he said, Swamiji, your Swamiji, his body and the position his body is in, there's only bones. And covering those bones is a microscopic layer of skin. And between the bones and skin, there are a few nerves. And these nerves are being stretched over the bare bones. And for any ordinary man who is in such a physical situation or condition, he would be crying in agony, screaming in pain. But your Gurudev is translating the Bhagavatam, unaffected, undisturbed by the most severe conditions of suffering that the body could possibly produce. Well, this is the steadiness of the Akinchan Sadhu, that no matter what happens to his mind or to his body, he doesn't fail to exhibit the transcendental qualities of Krishna because he's fixed on Krishna's service. So that was the conclusion of the story of Sri Haridas Pandit, Sri Govindaji's temple commander. So it would be nice if all the temple commanders of the world were Akinchan Sadhus. Not only temple commanders, but everybody. You and I and everyone. If we were Akinchan, it would be a much better world. What to speak of the temples. Now our next story. So we have some teaching here, of course, from Haridas Pandit, is to pray to Haridas Pandit that we can also become like him, Akinchan. We heard about his glories, we heard about his name, we heard about his guna, his qualities and activities, and we heard about his form. We heard everything about him. And so now we know him. And he knows us. Because he's Trikala Gyan. He knows in the future people will hear about me. because some devotees ask Krishna's Kaviraj, please don't describe me in your book, because of their own humility or personal feelings. So you won't find too much description in this Chaitanya Charitamrita about certain devotees like Gopal Bhatta and others. But Haridas Pandit, he was a little more gracious in that regard. So he allowed himself to be glorified so that we could actually connect with him. And we could pray to him and we could say, oh, I've met you in the pages of Chaitanya Charitamrita. And I entered the Govinda temple with you and I watched you arrange for the service there. And I've become inspired by your association. I've really become inspired by your association. And I have some small requests, and I know you will fulfill my request, because the nature of Vaishnava is to be very kind and very generous. And you don't consider someone who's qualified or not. You just consider someone's eagerness. And we are certainly very eager to follow in your footsteps and also become Akinchan Sadhus. So now we've heard about you and we become inspired by hearing about you to become like you and follow in your footsteps and also serve Govindaji, because our Ishtadeva is also Govinda, as was yours, or as is yours. But we're not serving Govindaji very well because we have so many ulterior motives and so many distractions and improper desires. So you, please, you're a pundit, you're learned, so you know all about my condition. And you're a pure devotee of Hari, so you're Haridas Pandit. So please bless me that we can also become a Kinshan, as Prabhupada translates, without motive. A Kinshan, without motive. Very interesting, because this is a rather unusual definition of a Kinshan. Kinshan's motive, because motive, usually a Kinshan is described as without any other desire. So there's a difference between desire and motive. Because motive is desire with some plan for, it's a more complicated desire is a motive. Like selfish desire, there's a lot more packed into a motive than a desire. Because a desire may come and go, it may be fleeting, it may be innocent to some extent, and it may not involve too many people, or maybe only yourself and some objects of the world. But motive, there's a lot of manipulation, a lot of planning there. It may be a whole scheme behind a motive involving several people and places and objects. So motive is rather complex. So this is rather interesting definition of Kinshan, without motive. This is actually one definition of love, that actually pure love is without motive. So really, to be an Akinchan Sadhu, because there's so many sadhus that are even called Akinchan Sadhu. They have nothing but a kamandalu, a water pot, and maybe a blanket. But they have a motive. They have many motives. Many, many motives. Although they even are labeled or considered Akinchan by the worldly people. But actually their motive, they have ulterior motives. They want to merge into Brahman, or they want to be God, or they want mystic power, or they want to fame. So this definition is a bhakti's definition of Akinchan. Because one can only be without motive if they're a lover of God. If they're not a lover of God, they have motive. Akamasa, what is that verse? What is it? Mukti, you know that from the Chaitanya Charitamrita? Yeah, how does it start? No, the first line, how does it start? Mukti, bhukti.
Yeah, that's the second line. Bhukti, mukti, siddhi, kami, sakale, ashanti.
Yeah, that's the first line. Mukti, bhukti, siddhi, kami, sakale, ashanti. All these people have a motive. And when you have a motive, you can't be peaceful. If you want enjoyment, you can't be peaceful. If you want liberation, you can't be peaceful. If you want mystic power or name or fame as a great yogi, you can't be peaceful. Bhukti, mukti, siddhi, kami. Krishna bhakta naishkam, ateva shanta. He has no motive. A devotee of Krishna has no motive. So certainly, Atta Eva. Eva means certainly, absolutely, indeed. He is peaceful. Reading from Madhyalila. Well, firstly, is there any questions about the temple commander, Sri Haridas Pandit, before we go on to the next story? So we take the dust from Sri Haridas Pandit's feet and place it on our heads and sprinkle some on our hearts and pray that he'll help us proceed. Now we hear the very interesting story of Subhuti Roy taking shelter of Braj. This is from Madhya Leela, chapter 25, verse 186 through 201 and 204 through 207. Eta rupa gosai jabe matura aila Dhruvagate tanre Subhuti Roya milila. Dhruvagat. Oh, it's interesting. When Rupa Goswami reached Mathura, he met Subhuti Roy on the banks of the Yamuna at a place called Dhruvagat. Dhruva Maharaj was sent to Vrindavan by his guru, could say guru of sorts, his mother. His mother was acting as his Vartman Pradarshika guru, or you could say she was acting as his family guru, because family gurus really actually act to fulfill one's material desires. So he had a material desire to have a kingdom bigger than his father. So he asked his mother what to do about that. And she said, you should worship God. And then Dhruva said, where can I find him? And she said, in the forest of Vrindavan. You can find God in the forest of Vrindavan. So she sent him to Vrindavan. So he went to the forest of Madhuvan. And there, on the banks of the Yamuna, he performed his austerities. Narada Muni met him there, gave him Diksha, Mantra Diksha. So that was his... First there was Vartman Pradarshika Guru, his mother. Mothers are very kind. Pointed him in the right direction. Go to Vrindavan. And Narada Muni came, initiated, gave him Mantra Diksha. Then he performed austerities and chanted the mantra with his Sankalpa. Whereas the mantra is meant to give love of God, but he had a different intention. He wanted money, love of money. So that's why one of our Gaudiya Vaishnava sannyasis, who's not here in this world anymore, but he once made a comment. He said, I think the problem with your ISKCON sannyasis is that they have received this Kam Gayatri. And this Kam Gayatri is very, very powerful. Very, very powerful. But when they're chanting Kam Gayatri, they were holding material desires in their heart. And this Kam Gayatri has fulfilled their material desires after 15 or 20 years. And this was spoken by an extremely reputed senior sannyasi of the Gaudiya mission. That was his realization. Of course, it's based on Shastra. It's based on Brahma Samhita and other Shastras, especially Brahma Samhita, where it's told that chant this mantra, Lord Brahma, and will fulfill whatever desire you have. Kam means desire. But Kam Gayatri is supposed to fill us with desires to love Kamadeva. The transcendental Kamadeva is Madan Mohan, Madan Gopal. But if our mind is not fixed, our sankalpa is not fixed in a transcendental position, then we chant this very powerful mantra and it may backfire. Sometimes people go out hunting with a gun and they shoot themselves. You hear about it. It sounds rather strange, but I don't know how it happens. But you hear about it. They go out with a shotgun and they trip somewhere when they're hunting, and then they trip and they pull the trigger and they blow themselves up. So the Kam Gayatri is meant to take us out of the world of material desire It's a desire mantra. Kam Gayatri. Song of desire. Gayatri means song. That song which is supposed to deliver us to the fulfillment of our spiritual desire. Gayatri. Kam Gayatri. So Dhruva Maharaj, he received a spiritual mantra from a spiritual guru, Sadguru, but he applied it to fulfill his sankalpa. His sankalpa was incorrect. His intention was material fulfillment. So here on the banks of the river Yamuna, in the same place, Rupa Goswami met Subhuti Roy. And this is how the story goes on. I think I lost my place here. So now we'll hear the story. How did Subhuti Roy end up in Vrindavan on the bank of the Yamuna at Dhruva Ghat, where Dhruva was doing his austerity? So Krishnas Kaviraj, he explains, it's like what they call a flashback in the movies. You see some scene in the movies and the person's saying, yes, there's a conversation. Yes, when I was a boy, I used to walk in the forest, and all of a sudden the movie changes and you're in the forest and there's a young boy walking. It's called flashback. So, of course, there weren't any movies 500 years ago, but there were good writers like Krishnas Kaviraj. So he's employing the literary technique, which later became visual, called flashback. So now we're going back in time a little bit, because Subhuti Roy is not a native. He is not a native of Mathura. He's a native of Bengal. Purve jabe Subhuti Roy, chila gode adhikari, Husaina kana sayad kare tahara chakari. Chakari. Purve, before or formerly, Subhuti Roy had been a big landholder in Godadesh, Bengal. That's what the word Rai actually means. Like Ramananda Roy, he was a governor of, it means you have a lot of land in your hand. Like Ramananda Roy, he had all of South India in his hand. Godavari River and all the land. So this is Subhuti Roy. So he had so much land. It's translated Subhuti Roy. He was big landholder. And Sayyada Hussein Khan was a servant of Subhuti Roy. So Subhuti Roy is a Hindu landlord, and he had one Muslim working for him. And then it says, Digi kod haite tare, Munsifa koela, Chidra panavrae tare, Chabuka marila. Digi kodaite, means to dig a big lake. There's a place near Mayapur called Digi or something like that. What's it called? There's one Leela place there behind the yoga pit. I think it was a big lake there or something. Subhuti Roy put Hussein Khan in charge of digging a big lake. But once finding fault with his workmanship, he struck him with a whip. Pache jabe Hussein Khan, gode raja hoila, Subhuti Roy yeratino bahu bahadila, bodhaila. Later, Hussein Khan somehow or other was appointed Nawab by the central Muslim government. As a matter of obligation, he increased the opulences of Subhuti Roy. So it's interesting that in these social dealings in the material world, that at one point, this is the way karma works, that today's Bhakta Joe is tomorrow's Sadguru. Today he's Bhakta Joe, and 20 years later he's Sadguru. In other words, we don't know who we're living with, or we don't know, because most of us don't have Trikala Gyan Chakshush. We can't see the future. We can't even see the present. Most of us don't even see the present, because we're always planning for the future. What will I do tomorrow? And the meanwhile, the present is just running by. That's another point. But who can understand that your ditch digger will become the prime minister? he's hired as digging a ditch for you. He's digging a lake. He's digging a hole. He's digging a hole. A few years later, he comes riding in the town in a gold Rolls Royce. Says, "Remember me?" So this is basically what's being said here. So karma works in amazing ways. Therefore, it's very important to deal with each and every person in our environment in a very loving and humble and respectful way. Because ultimately, everyone's equal. Because everyone's part and parcel of God. And everyone is our God brother and God sister. Or as Saint Francis used to say, brother dog, brother tree. Everyone's my brother because the Father is one. God is one. The Father is one. Right? Brother flower, brother tree, brother grass. Oh, brother grass, how are you? Do you mind if I sit on you? Oh, I don't mind. Don't sit long, though. Otherwise, I'll turn yellow. And I like to be green. Because if you sit long, he's deprived of sunshine, then he becomes yellow, gets jaundice. He turns yellow. So, this is idea. Because if we have knowledge, then we're careful. Savadana. Knowledge creates a gentleness in our approach. But when one is ignorant, he's rather gross. He's gross in his behavior, or crass. They say crass. He can only see in a with ignorance gives very limited vision. Knowledge gives broad vision. The deeper the knowledge, the broader the vision. As Kaviraj says, somehow or other he was appointed. It says governor by the central Muslim government. Now the plot will thicken. Sometimes, no offense to the ladies in the audience, but sometimes, at least men have made this phrase, that if you see any problems in the world or you see any world wars, you can always trace them to a woman. Men say like this. Of course, I'm sure women say it another way around. The problem with the world is the men. If they put women in charge of the world, it would be a much better world. Or whatever. It probably would be. Because Radharani's in charge of the spiritual world, and it works great. Right? The spiritual world is run by Radharani. She's Vrindavanishwari. Ishwari means the governor. She governs it. The word govern means control. And Ishwari means control. So she's Vrindavanishwari. She's the governess. The governess or governor of the spiritual world. And as she rules, everyone follows. Everyone's attracted to go there. But do you realize that the prime minister is a lady? But then, everything's turned upside down. This is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. So in the spiritual world, everything's run by a lady. In the material world, everything's run by men. I never heard of World War II in Vrindavan, or World War I, or the Spanish-American War, or the French and English War, or this war, or that war. There's no wars over there. So if if Radharani's in charge of the world, then everything will be wonderful. Tara stri tara ange deke maraner chine. Suburi rayera marite kahae Rajasthane. Later, when the wife of Nawab Syed Hussein Khan saw the whip marks on her husband's body, she requested him to kill Subudhi Roy. not a big request. I mean, after all, he did whip your back, so an eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. He whipped my back, so I'll kill you. Seems the reaction is a little severe. Tara Stri, says his wife. That's interesting. Tara Stri, his wife. Tara Ange, his body. Deke. Raja kahe, amara poshtarai hoya pita. Tahare marimu ami bhala Bholona kota. Hussein Khan replied, Subhuti Roy has maintained me very carefully. He was just like a father to me. Now you are asking me to kill him? This is not a very good proposal. Generally, women are not very logical. Or reasonable. Yes, he scratched you. Okay, kill him. Shri Kahe. This verse is Raj Kahe. Now, cause this is drama, right? Lila means drama. So there's acting, there's emotion, there's rasa, bhav, anubhavs, and all these things. Stri Kahe, jati laha jari prani na manibe. Raja Kahe, jati nile ino nahi jibe. She said, and he said, she said, as a last alternative, the wife suggested that then she said, all right, maybe that was a little rash. My last statement was a little rash or a little unreasonable. All right, listen. Take away Subhuti Roy's caste and turn him into a Muslim. That's another way of saying kill him. Because if you kill someone's body, then they die once. If you kill someone socially, they die every day. So actually, this is a more mean form of murder. Killing, then you're dishonored once, you're dead. But if you're insulted, then you're dishonored every day. As Krishna tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, dishonor is worse than death. Because death is one time, dishonor is every day. If you live for 100 years and you're only 20, 80 years you have to suffer dishonor. Oh, you! Every time someone sees you, what's your name? Oh, my name is Arjuna. Oh, you're the guy that ran away from the battlefield? I heard about you. Ooh. You know, right? So the same way, we can't understand what that means to lose your caste or to be converted from this to that, because we don't have anything to convert from, and we don't have anything to lose. We have all to gain and nothing to lose. We have no caste, no varna. When jati what? You know, there's no jati. We can only accumulate. We can only increase or improve. When you're in the gutter, everything is up. You can't go down any further. But when you're Subhuti Roy, you're a Kshatriya, landowner, millionaire, Hindu, respected in society, and then you become... This is a very bad proposal. So this Stri... Mrs. Khan went from bad to worse. Her first suggestion, although it sounded rash, was actually a little bit lenient. When she considered it further, she said, all right, don't kill him, because you don't seem to want to do that, but kill him this way. But her husband replied, if he did this, Subhuti Roy would not live. Because he couldn't face it. He couldn't stand the humiliation. So he would give up his body. So it's called a lose-lose situation. Not a win-win. It's called lose and lose. Lose if you're killed and lose if you change your caste. Then Sri Marite Chahe Raja Sankate Padila Karonjara Panitara Muke Deo Yaila. This became a perplexing problem for the Nawab, because his wife kept requesting him to kill Subhuti Roy. In modern terms, we would say, his wife kept nagging him. At least in America, they would say, nagging him. My wife is nagging him. Why didn't you kill him? What's with you? Get with it. Kill him, will you? Yeah, tomorrow, just now coming. He was doing the Indian thing. Yes, I'll do it. Yes, I'm doing. I am doing. Then 1 week goes by. What you did? No, I'm about to do. It's almost done. It will be done. 500 years ago in India, the Hindus were so rigid and strict that if a Muslim sprinkled a little water from his pitcher upon a Hindu, the Hindu would immediately be ostracized and cast from society. Tabe suburi rai se chadmapana varanasi aila sava vishaya chariya. Taking the Nawab sprinkling water upon him as an opportunity, Subhuti Roy left his family and business affairs and went to Varanasi. Oh, excuse me. I just forgot one verse. Sri Marite Chahi Raja Sankaite Padila Karonyarapani Tara Mukite. I didn't read the translation. Did I read it? Did I read it he sprinkled water on?
No, not yet.
I get a little confused in this. This became a perplexing problem for him. Oh, because his wife kept nagging him, but the second part I didn't read. Finally, the Nawab sprinkled a little water on Subhuti Roy's head from a pitcher that had been used by a Muslim. We can hardly relate to something like this in the 500 years later because, you know, we come from a background where you sit around together and, you know, one guy drinks a bottle and he passes it to another guy and a pipe or peace pipe or any kind of thing and whatever. Or you go to these gatherings and people share their food or the idea of communal sharing and sharing wives and husbands and food and swapping this and swapping that and you wear my clothes, now wear your clothes. I mean, the idea of some rigid rules and regulations is we can't conceive of it. It's like, you know, free love and my food and your food. Yeah, my apartment. Yeah, use my apartment, my car. Yeah, take my car. You know, it's so the idea of someone sprinkling a little water on our head and all of a sudden we everything's finished. We can't conceive of. So what was Subhuti Roy's response? He took it as an opportunity to leave his family and business affairs and he went to Varanasi. Because in Vedic times, if someone was going to take sannyas or leave the family because taking sannyas is considered to be social suicide, where one evades a lot of responsibilities that are incumbent upon a member of a particular varna or ashram. Although sannyas is an ashram in itself, but it facilitates the ignoring of other social responsibilities. So apparently he was contemplating. In other words, he himself was also fed up with his wife, as a Nawab. Nawab wasn't too happy about his his wife. So from this verse, it seems that Kaviraj, between the lines, he's saying that he took the opportunity to leave his business affairs and his wife. So it seems like he was rather eager. And when the water was sprinkled on him, he said, oh, well, I have to go now. I can't live here and save my face. So goodbye, wife, and goodbye, business, and off to Varanasi. So what I was mentioning, this idea of why Varanasi, because in all of India, no matter where you lived, if you were considering to be a sannyasi or to live as a renunciate, there were only two places you would go, either Haridwar or Varanasi. These were considered for two reasons. One point is that in Shastra, these are the Muktipuris. Muktipuris means cities that grant liberation. So if one dies there in Benares, or what was usually previously called Kashi, or Haridwar, or Ayodhya, or Shiv Kanchi, or Mathura, or Mayapuri. Mayapuri is somewhere in Assam. Sometimes people think it means Mayapur. But the name of it is Mayapuri, somewhere in, I think, Assam. These seven cities, which I didn't mention all, but five or six I mentioned, these seven cities are mentioned in Padma Purana and other places as Muktipuri, cities of liberation. So when Varanasi and Haridwar are inhabited by hundreds of sannyasis, so generally these are the preferred cities to go to when you want to take sannyas. So he went to Varanasi. Prabhupada's purport. It appears that Subhuti Roy was a big landholder and a responsible, respectable gentleman. He could not, however, avoid the social misconception that one becomes a Muslim when water is sprinkled on one's face from a Muslim's pitcher. Actually, he was planning to give up his material life and leave his family. Hindu culture recommends four divisions: brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyas. Subhuti Roy was thinking of taking sannyas, and by the grace of Krishna, he received this opportunity. He therefore left his family and went to Varanasi. The system of Varnashram Dharma is very scientific. If one is directed by the Varnashram institution, he will naturally think of retiring from family life at the end of his life. Therefore, sannyas is compulsory at the age of 50, which probably mentions many places. Although generally, in the age of Kali, life was divided into four portions in every age. But in the age of Kali, people lived to be 100 years in the beginning. So the first 25 years are brahmachari, then 25 years grihastha, then 25 years grihastha, then 25 years sannyas. So according to the Vedic system, at the age of 75, one should take sannyas after spending so much time in vanaprast. But here and other places, Prabhupada quotes another verse, pancho vanam bachas urdvam, or something like that, where he says that, he quotes one verse, at the age of 50, one should retire to the van. But in that verse, it's describing at the age of 50, one should take vanaprast, because van, but no, that's there. It says pancho something means 50, one should go to the van. So here, the actual shastras are saying at the age of 50, you should go to the forest. Give up your house and home and go to the forest, which means you go on Tirtha Yatra. And Tirthas are often situated in forests or secluded areas. And you go there and live a very simple and austere life and perform Chaturmasya Vrata, which is specifically meant for grihasthas, although Mahaprabhu observed it, and other sannyasis, but it's especially meant for grihasthas. Grihasthas observe it because of karma. They want to become free from the sins of grihastha life, business and other dealings. So they're actually required in the vanaprastha stage of life to observe strict chaturmasya. Sannyasis observe chaturmasya just to inspire the grihasthas, really, and also to spend their time, because generally they wander and travel during the 4 months, but during the 4 months of the quote-unquote rainy season, we were here for 4 months and it rained about 5 buckets worth in 4 months. And they couldn't travel, so they would stay in one place and they wanted to do something, because traveling takes a lot of time, but when you're not traveling, you have a lot of time on your hands. So then they would spend their time doing austerity. And that just, they're already pure to a great extent, but that increases their purity, because the sannyasi has already gone through 25 years of vanaprastha ashram. So he's already done 25 chaturmasya vratas, right? So he's already quite pure in traditional varnashram system. If you read in the Puranas, it always says this is for grihasthas. That's why Prabhupada prescribed an extremely minimal observance of chaturmasya for the members of ISKCON, which is everyone, sannyasi, brahmachari, all ashrams are there, just to respect the Vrat and to honor Lord Chaitanya's observance of it. So he had the idea to take sannyas, so he came to Varanasi. Prayaschita puchilatino pandatera gane tanra kahe tapta gritta kanna chare prane. When Subhuti Roy consulted the learned brahmanas at Varanasi, asking them how his conversion to Islam could be counteracted, they advised him to drink hot ghee and give up his life. That's, if you drink a liter of hot ghee, you'll slide off into eternity. Which means Haribol. K. Keha kahi enahi apadoshahai. Apadosha, a little fault, a big punishment. Shunya rahila rai kariya samshai. Yeah, samshai. When Subhuti Roy consulted some other brahmanas, they told him that he had not committed a grievous fault, and that consequently he should not drink hot ghee and give up his life. As a result, Subhuti Roy was doubtful about what to do. So tomorrow we'll find out whether Subhuti Roy drank hot ghee or he did something else.